Janmadhyasya yatam vayaditratascha te svabhinya swarat te ne brahma vidyaya adhikavaye mudyam tiyat surya te jo vari mridam yatha vinimayo yatra trisargo mrisha dhamna svena sabha nirasta kuvakam satyam param dhimahi.
Srila Prabhupada's translation. O my Lord, Sri Krishna, son of Vasudev, O all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I meditate upon Lord Sri Krishna because he is the absolute truth and the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance and destruction of the manifested universes. He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations, and he is independent because there is no other cause beyond him. It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. By him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion, as one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire, or land seen on water. Only because of him do the material universes temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature appear factual, although they are unreal. I therefore meditate upon him, Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. I meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. Paragraph 3 of Srila Prabhupada's translation, which is paragraph 3 of Prabhupada's translation not only of this verse, but paragraph 3 of the Bhaktivedanta purports to Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada writes, "It is natural that a philosophical mind wants to know about the origin of the creation. At night he sees the stars in the sky, and he naturally speculates about their inhabitants. Such inquiries are natural for man because man has a developed consciousness which is higher than that of the animals. The author of Srimad Bhagavatam gives a direct answer to such inquiries. He says that the Lord Sri Krishna is the origin of all creations. He is not only the creator of the universe but the destroyer as well. The manifested cosmic nature is created at a certain period by the will of the Lord. It is maintained for some time and then it is annihilated by his will. Therefore, the supreme will is behind all cosmic activities. Of course, there are atheists of various categories who do not believe in a creator, but that is due to a poor fund of knowledge. The modern scientist, for example, has created space satellites, and by some arrangement or other, these satellites are thrown into outer space to fly for some time at the control of the scientist who is far away. Similarly, all the universes with innumerable stars and planets are controlled by the intelligence of the personality of Godhead." In this third paragraph, Srila Prabhupada continues to discuss the first words of Srimad Bhagavatam, Janmadhyasya Yataha, that the supreme truth is the source of all emanations. He is whom, by whom everything is maintained, and by whom everything is destroyed. Janmadhyasya Yataha. This is taken from the Vedanta Sutra, was given the exact delineation of who that truth is. Who knows the Upanishadic expansion of this? Yatova Imani, who knows? Anyone could? Jayante? Tad Brahmeti. Taittiriya Upanishad. Vedanta Sutra collects and But sutra means puts in sutra form, that which is given in the Upanishads, which generally the Upanishads are. Upanishads means Vedanta, at the end of Veda. So Vedanta Sutra puts it in sutra form. So that which is tadvijignyasa, that which is proper subject of inquiry, tadbrahmiti, that supreme truth, is that by which everything is manifest, that in which and by which everything exists, and that which destroys everything. So that is summarized in the first two sutras of Vedanta Sutra, Atato Brahma Jignyasva. Now we should inquire into Brahma. What is that Brahma? That Janmadhyasya Yataha, Janma Adi, that by which there is manifestation, maintenance, and destruction. So Srila Prabhupada continues to discuss this, that the philosophical mind inquires, how is everything going on? What is going on in the universe? There are so many universities which are all the results of the knowledge which is gathered there and distributed there, whatever knowledge may be there. There's a lot of speculation also. Is that which has been gathered all based on questioning. History means what happened. Science means how does it happen. Geography means where does it happen. All who, what, why, when, where. But the ultimate question, what is the ultimate principle of everything? People, they don't even think to answer this question. Once Prabhupada was in Caracas in Venezuela, and they asked, we were speaking with some philosophers, or people who advertised themselves as members of a metaphysics society. So they asked the question, why does anything exist? Prabhupada said, that is the wrong question. You don't even know how to answer the right question. What the real question is, what is the source of everything? What is Brahma? Kim tad Brahma? What is Brahma? So that, why does anything exist? We can't understand that immediately. First, you have to see, what is the source of everything? Why did he make it exist? Then you ask him. If you can't, if it's too difficult for you to understand, then you see who made it and why. Why? What did he do it for? So Prabhupada is speaking here of the philosophical attempt, and the answer is given immediately. That the so-called Vedantists, they may speculate that Brahma means this, or it means that. What is the nature of Brahma? But the answer is given here immediately. The author of Srimad Bhagavatam gives a direct answer to such inquiries. There's in the second canto, there's a chapter. Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. Everything, you know, by studying Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, you can know everything, as is stated in Srimad Bhagavad Gita. One can know everything. What's that verse? That's also there. I will explain to you everything. What does Prabhupada say? Phenomenal and numinous. Prabhupada used those words. By which you can know everything. Yajgyatva avashishyate. There's another verse in the 15th chapter.
Yoma.
Eva. Janati. Purushottamam. Sasaravavit. Vajantema. Sarva bhavena bharata. One who knows One who Yomam Eva Asammudho Janati, one who knows me as Purushottam, not in any other way. There may be experts. I was just looking at a book. There's an expert on Raga Rupa Bhakti, who's a full number one with a PhD, who thinks he knows about Raga Rupa Bhakti by doing a 1 year study on it with a grant from the university. So he knows Krishna, but he doesn't know Krishna as Purushottam. He has got his concept of Krishna. He knows a lot about Krishna according to his conception, but he doesn't know Krishna as Purushottam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So one who knows me, Krishna says, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without doubting, without being bewildered, he understands me. And the proof of that is sasarvavid bhajante mam sarvabhavena bharata. He worships me in all respects. So this is the proof that these scholars don't know anything about Krishna, because they don't worship him. They think he's an object of study. You have to be careful of this in your studies. Don't make Krishna the object of your study. You are the object of Krishna's enjoyment, not that Krishna is the object of your study, and you will become a pandit, and then you can be well known and famous for speaking. But bhajante mam sarva bhavena, this study of Srimad Bhagavatam is an act of worship of Krishna. Any other approach to Bhagavatam leaves one on the outside. One cannot enter into Bhagavatam, one cannot enter into Krishna consciousness without the desire to worship Krishna. One remains an outsider. One cannot come inside. So the answer to all questions, simply to accept Krishna is supreme. Of course, Bhagavatam does not... The very beauty of Bhagavatam is that Bhagavatam doesn't leave us speculating who is God, what is the nature of God. As Prabhupada often said, it is not enough to say that God is great. One must know how He is great. His greatness is described in Srimad Bhagavatam. In the beginning, or near the beginning of Shukdev Goswami's narration, we hear about the glory of the Lord in the matter of creating the cosmic manifestation, which is about as far as most theological or semi-theological systems in the world go. Atra sarga visargas cha. How far do they go? There's some idea of, well, even that there's sarga and visarga, it's all merged into one in most theological systems. They don't have any idea that there's original creation by the Lord and subsequent creation. It's, for them, it's just all creation. But the actual subject, or the main subject of the Bhagavatam, is ashraya. Who said ashraya? Ashraya. 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 Ashraya means the shelter of everything. All the activities go on within Krishna. But actually this Janmada Sayataha, this creation, maintenance, development, which those who are neophyte theists put great stress on this, but it's not really the very important matter for Krishna. We think it's very important because we think that we are part of this material world, which is our disease. So we think that this creation of the world, and we think that the material world is a place for our enjoyment. So God is so great, He's given us a place for us to enjoy. And He's so kind, He arranges for us to enjoy it. And If we worship him nicely, then we will go to a place which he has arranged where there's unlimited enjoyment for ourselves. And he's there somewhere in the corner. We can run off somewhere time to time and say a prayer to him. Otherwise you can do like the ex-Archbishop of Canterbury proposed to do. You can spend the whole first 100 years in heaven glorifying God, and then the rest of eternity just enjoying yourself, because that's what God does. But it is not the great glory of the Supreme Lord that he has created this world. Just like there may be an architect who makes so many wonderful buildings, and if you're always talking about this, he made some outhouse. And you're always going on about, he created this outhouse, and it has this fancy flushing system. But that's not his glory. That's not the purpose of him being an architect. He didn't become an architect. He didn't build the buildings just to make an outhouse, because we are cockroaches. We think that the outhouse is the most important thing. But he has his own world. So he is the shelter. Means not the shelter of our sense gratification, but he is the shelter of all beings. Another meaning of ashray, if we take that, ultimately prem, or love of Krishna is the subject matter of Bhagavatam, then ashray means who? Radharani. Krishna is Vishay Vigraha. He is the object of love. And Radharani is Ashray Vigraha, or she is that in which it exists. So this is the beginning, Janmadhya Siyata, to see that from our perspective, by the Shakha Chandranyaya, by seeing the moon by first of all indicating the branches of a tree, we have to see the moon. First, look, you see these branches here? You see in between the branches that round? Oh, that's the moon, all right. So we are to see the moon, which is far away. We have no experience, so we're shown first of all something which is very close. Something that was within our experience. And then it's indicated what is that which is far away. We can begin to relate to that. Actually, the moon is not between the branches of the tree. According to our vision, it is. But so we can have a first vision of the moon, we're shown, oh, all right. And then we see, well, now the moon is no longer. What happened? It moved. Then we can begin our astronomy studies. Yes, the moon is not between the branches of the tree. Now you've seen it. Now there's a lot more to be said about it than just that it's between the branches of the tree. A lot, lot more. So we, first of all, we may see God as the creator, maintainer, and destroyer of the material world. That's a beginning understanding. But then there's so much more to be understood of how he is Satyam Param, how he is the supreme truth. This verse gives us the basis of seeing God through our present vision. He is the cause of all causes. He is the original cause. Janmadhya Sayataha. He is independent, all-knowing. He imparted the Vedic knowledge unto Brahma at the time of creation. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavaye Muhyanti Yat Suryaha. He keeps even the demigods, even they are illusioned. Tejo Vari Mridam Yata, just like the illusory manifestation of fire seen in water or water seen on land. Yet, this Bhagavatam points us towards that even though this is all manifested by him, still he is not part of this world. He has his own world. He, even though everyone in this world, all the demigods are illusioned, he is not illusioned. This is just pointing, giving us a beginning. That inquiries are there. Someone with a philosophical bent of mind will inquire, what is going on? What's the whole universe? What's it all about? If we hear from Srimad Bhagavatam, from devotees, Bhagavata Parogya Vaishnavara Sthane, we should hear Bhagavatam from devotees, then we can understand who is Krishna. Not just some idea of God, we have some idea of God, but Krishna is much more than the concept of God which is possible to be formed by those who do not have information, which if we don't have the Bhagavata information, then we can go as far as aparoksha gyan. Pratyaksha, paroksha, aparoksha. Knowledge directly received through our senses, then indirectly through speculation, then receiving knowledge from other persons who may be Einsteins, or they may be very intelligent, but without receiving knowledge from beyond the material source, then we can never know who is Krishna. We can speculate as to the nature of God, but that speculation will always be faulty, because we don't recognize our own basic disease, that we are trying to be enjoyers separate from Him. And even though we have some concept of Him, then we become pious people, we think that this idea of being an independent enjoyer is so strong that we think that His function is to enhance our enjoyment. So the Bhagavad teaches us, just turns us around, that we are meant for His enjoyment. This is anathema to the Mayavadis, who think that, well, He cannot be an enjoyer. We are enjoyers. That is a polluted idea. So the idea to, they think that the idea to enjoy is a pollution. Therefore, we should stop all endeavors to enjoy anything. And the idea that the Supreme is also an enjoyer, they take that as a great mistake. But they make a great mistake in thinking that, because they think that enjoyment means exploitation. And actually, that's true in the material sphere. Enjoyment necessitates exploitation, or impinging, at the very least, impinging upon someone else's enjoyment. The whole material world is a big competition, how everyone can enjoy. But that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, and that He is, His enjoyment is not a matter of exploitation, but rather that by His enjoying, He gives great pleasure. He enhances the enjoyment of others. And in fact, no one can be happy, no one can enjoy without being linked with Krishna. Actually, this word enjoy and being happy, they're almost synonyms in English. In Russian? But that's why it's good for you to learn Sanskrit, actually. Because there are different... Happiness is an experience, we can say. That's sukha. But enjoyment means bhoga. So the bhog, the intent to enjoy this material world, that is always a cause of distress. As we learn in Bhagavad Gita. What is that verse? Adyanta vanta konteya Yehi samsparsha ja bhoga dukkha yonya evate. We think bhoga means sukha, but it's actually a cause of dukkha. That's the great mis. We think we shall enjoy this world and we shall be happy. Dukkha yonya, it's the cause of dukkha. Yehi samsparsha ja bhoga. Yes, really. So you're thinking, we're thinking the next word is going to be sukha, but it's dukkha. Dukkha yonya evate. But you think, they think, well, all right, we'll enjoy now and suffer later. But no, adyantavanta kontaya, even from the very beginning, it is a cause of distress. Therefore, nateshu ramate buddhaha. One does not, who is intelligent, does not try to take pleasure in this. So, Krishna is the enjoyer, but he enjoys Krishna's enjoyment, his bhoga, that is categorically different from the living beings attempt to enjoy, which for them is, we were just hearing about the five kinds of adharma. So for the jiva to try to enjoy is for him adharma, because his dharma is jiva swarup hoy Krishna nitya das. His dharma is to serve the Lord. So when one is fixed in one's own dharma, then there is harmony. So by serving, he achieves happiness. By attempting to be served or to exploit, he only achieves distress. But because there is a... because he has identified himself as the Prabhu or the Purusha, because he has identified with that, he experiences a kind of happiness which is not actually happiness at all. But there's a feel. What is called happiness means the sense of dominating over others, or a transformation of consciousness by which one feels a sensation, such as the sensation of eating nice food or enjoying sex. Or it's a sensation which makes one experiences sensation and identifies it as happiness, although it's not actually happiness. We are divorced from knowing what actually happiness is. Happiness means atmasukh. But because we identify with the mind and the body, when the mind and the body has some kind of sensation, which has nothing to do with the nature of this, we think this is happiness. But then this generates more and more and more distress. So for Krishna to be the enjoyer, he is the enjoyer, and that is his natural position. And in his doing so, it is amogha lila. There's nothing wrong in that. There's nothing possible to be wrong in. It's not possible for Krishna to do anything wrong at any time or any place. Even if Krishna was to do something wrong, it just by his very swarup, just by his very essence of being the center of everything, then if anyone thinks that Krishna is wrong, they are wrong. Even if Krishna does something which is wrong according to mundane vision, because everyone is supposed to be in line with him, then we think he's doing something wrong because we're judging him as one of us. But thinking that he does something wrong is wrong for us. So when Krishna lies, steals, cheats, dances with others' wives, if we fail to worship that, we become sinful. If we did any of those activities ourselves, or if we supported anyone else doing it, we would be sinful. But failure to recognize Krishna's lying, stealing, cheating, debauchery, or whatever it may be called, as being absolutely pure, absolutely irreproachable, that is in itself sinful. Sometimes foolish Hindu so-called philosophers, they try to justify Krishna's debauchery, and they present it as allegory, or they say that, well, Krishna was quite good, but he has to take birth again to become purified. They become extremely sinful by their attempting to justify Krishna not understanding his position. So Srimad Bhagavatam, this should be understood very carefully. This Bhagavat Tattva Vijnana, this is the answer to all questions, everything that needs to be known. All the problems of human society can be rectified by taking knowledge from Srimad Bhagavatam. Because the only real problem is that we don't know or recognize Krishna. But it has to be understood very carefully. It's very easy to misunderstand because our devious tendency to consider ourselves as the enjoyer is so strong that even if superficially worshipping Krishna, we take that knowledge and convert ourselves into the enjoyers and the owners and exploiters of that knowledge. So there we find there may be sadhu who becomes very expert in explaining Bhagavatam and people become attracted to him and then he runs off with their wives or something like this. It's not unknown, not unheard of, because it becomes attractive. But instead of using that, instead of downplaying that attraction or directing that attraction to Krishna, if he just attempts to become the enjoyer of that, then again fall down. So what is the key to understanding Bhagavatam? What is the key?
Service.
So yeah, bhakti. Yeah. What is that verse Lord Shiva spoke? Aham vedmi shuko veti vyasa veti na veti va, then bhaktya grahya na bhudya na chatikaya. That Bhagavatam can be understood through bhakti, not through buddhi, not through intelligence, nor by studying the tikkas. Then what are you doing here? Well, Gopi Puranadanda Prabhu, I said to him some months ago, it's very nice that you're teaching Sanskrit. I'm not teaching Sanskrit. I'm teaching Bhagavatam, not teaching Sanskrit. Sanskrit is the medium. Bhagavatam is the subject. And Bhagavatam means, if we actually understand what is Bhagavatam, then we understand that we are meant for pleasing Krishna. So Bhagavatam, we study so that we can enter into the spirit of pleasing Krishna. And also, Bhagavatam is Krishna. So one serves Krishna by serving the Bhagavatam, by studying the Bhagavatam, with the aim of worshipping Krishna by doing so, establishing our relationship with Krishna by doing so, bringing this knowledge to others. So in the spirit of service, Bhagavatam can be understood. And what is the key principle in that bhakti that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu always stressed so much? That's amazing. Trinadapi sunichen. Sunich. So difficult, huh? Who wants to go to the Himalayas and sit in a cave for 10,000 years? And you, every 3 days a drop of water drips down from the stalagmite. That's your food. Who wants to do that? Think it's austere in Govardhan? Try the Himalayas. Can we perform such austerities? Very difficult, huh? But the yogis cannot imagine what it means to be Trinadapi Sunich. More difficult. More difficult than sitting in a cave is to actually become. It seems very difficult for us, although it's our act, that's what we are. We're supposed to be like that. But it seems so difficult to us. But if we can develop that, then all the truths of the Bhagavatam will be revealed. And if we don't, then it's all useless. Then you can become a good reciter. There are plenty of reciters. I'm sure there are plenty. Katas are going on here all the time, is it? Now it's Kartik coming on. There'll be so many katas. But if as a result of speaking or hearing such a kata, one doesn't actually imbibe humility of a devotee. And what kind of humility that Śrīla Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura used to emphasize so much? The akapat, the non-deceitful. It's a funny thing that in Bengali Vaishnavism, because it's known that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu emphasized humility, and it's difficult to be humble. But if one is humble, then one is recognized as an advanced devotee. So in Bengali Vaishnavism, it's become part of the culture to pretend to be humble. It's easier to pretend to be humble. And then people praise you. And then you become more proud. While pretending to be humble. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is really very strongly against this. So, it's not so easy. But we shall pray. Pray for the mercy of Bhagavatam. Pray for the mercy of Govardhan. Pray for the mercy of the gurus, that we can make some advancement so that we can serve the Lord, actually. I remember some years ago, Giriraj Maharaj saying that, I just read the Nectar of Devotion again after a few years. And then the devotee asked me, so what realization did you get? He said, well, I found I'd advanced a few lines. Let us pray for the mercy of the Supreme Lord that He can create, maintain, and destroy millions of universes. So, my false ego, which is bigger than millions of universes, you kindly destroy that so that I can actually be your servant and enter into your universe, which is only enterable into, only possible to be entered into by those who are eligible, means those. There's so many verses in Bhagavatam which describe what is the eligibility for entrance into the spiritual world. What is actual pure devotion? One verse. What is pure devotion? Well, Anyabhilashita Shunyam is compiled by Rupa Goswami as a summary of them all. One I was thinking is of. All right, we'll all say it together. Savai pung sam paro dharma yato bhaktira dhok suja ahaito kiya pratiyata yatma suprasidit. So practically this is the anyabhilashita shunyam is a restatement or a summary of this verse. So there are 2 minutes left, and if there's any question you want to ask. You're sitting with your back to the Lord who you are just serving, by the way. So, don't neglect that. Your question. Yeah. Should we bathe in Govinda Kund? You wanted to ask that question.
In general,
should we bathe in Govinda Kund? It's a big question. Everyone's asking. Well, most people are not asking. They're just dunking away. Should we or shouldn't we? Well, Shastra says we should do. Recommends us to do so. Śrīla Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura, it seems that it's not completely clear, but it seems that early in his preaching Leela, he said we're going to Radha Kund to take bath. What kind of bath he took doesn't say, but definitely later on he never bathed his body there, his transcendental form. Although he's always in Radha Kund. Whether he takes bath or not, he recommended that you take bath in the Radha Kund. The Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is Radha Kund. You take bath in that. neither he did nor any of his disciples did. They would sprinkle water on their heads. Should you bathe in all these different kuns? Shastra recommends it. Srila Prabhupada was actually more interested that his disciples do service. The phenomena of devotees coming to Vrindavan and spending weeks wandering around all different... Prabhupada wasn't into that at all. He was against it, actually. He's saying the devotees should come and do service. So, it would seem from Prabhupada's example that he was more interested that devotees, they render service to the Sankirtan mission, but then going around this kund, that kund, another kund. Also, to be considered is that this Tirtha Yatra is actually to be performed under the direction of a guru who guides you, not just these Tirtha gurus who, you know, they tell you a story and they take your money, but one who actually guides you in the significance of this. So we have this 1 month coming up, Parikrama. So presumably in each place, the glories of each place will be described. And then devotees may very reverently bathe there. Prabhupada, as you know, stopped devotees from bathing in Radhakund because they had taken it too frivolously. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said one can actually bathe in Radhakund when one develops a fully spiritual form. Otherwise, it's not Radhakund. We see that those who... It said that one will attain pure love for Radha, but we see devotees, they bathe in Radhakund and they're, you know, 10 minutes later, they're Lasiba. So, what happened? It means that the full bathing in Radhakund, it requires some qualification to do so, isn't it? Otherwise it won't. If we think of Radhakund as some material water or some object that we put on our bodies and that then there'll be instant transformation like that. So obviously qualification is required. If even Narad and the Kumaras cannot bathe there, then do we think we can just, you know, we get a bus to Radhakund and just jump in? It's not so easy. I usually say, if people ask me, well, okay, yeah, bathe in Radhakund, but bring the Upadeshamrita and start with chapter, the first verse, Vacha Vegam Manasa Krodha Vegam. Should we? Yes, Shastra says, but we should become qualified also. Bathing in different kuns and going on parikrama, that's all very good, but the essential principle of Krishna consciousness is to surrender at the lotus feet of a guru and take direction in devotional service. So many of these activities which are recommended in Shastra, they're good for people who haven't taken the full sankalpa, the full pledge to dedicate themselves in service. So if we're fully surrendered and we're cultivating that mood, then we may or may not bathe in these kuns, and it may or may not be helpful. Especially for those who have not come to that level, then that may be helpful for them as a preliminary activity. And for those who are on a very high level, who are seeing Govinda in Govinda Kund, then that's also suitable sadhana for them. Otherwise, according to the direction Srila Prabhupada gave us, he wasn't very enthusiastic that devotees spend a lot of time going this kund, that kund, another kund. He wanted to see how they're engaged in service to the Sankirtan mission. Maybe we could say ISKCON's different today to what it was. So maybe they say Prabhupada was teaching us at a very basic level, but I see Prabhupada was teaching us at a very high level, a mood of full surrender. If we can imbibe that mood of full surrender, that immediately brings us to the highest platform. Whereas talking about very high leelas and this and that, and with no surrender, we hear so much nowadays about prem and leela and rasa, we don't hear much about surrender. That's typical of the neophyte mentality, that one imagines oneself to be already on the highest level without doing the hard work or with giving up anarthas, actually dedicating ourselves in the service of Guru and Krishna. If we do all these things, then automatically everything will come. And for those who don't have faith, or they're not serious about that, and then for them there's a lot of talk and a lot of kundas and, you know, a lot of bratas and this and that. So devotees want to be like bridge bussies, but don't try to be a better bridge bussy than Prabhupada. If we can follow what he gave, and then you can be a bridge bussy. It's not by imitating the Babas that you'll become a spiritually advanced. Just follow what Prabhupada gave us, that's all. Bathing in Govinda Kund? Optional.
Exactly. We've heard from more details of Prabhupada's life as a run across. And then Sannyas here in Vrindavan, that he would be spending most of his time chanting Hare Krishna. And before he started actually translating the Bhagavatam, he would study Bhagavatam 2 to 3 hours every day and chanting the rest of the day.
Yeah.
So he himself, who was on the highest level, he himself, you know, was showing the example, and total absorption, his bhakti was was constant.
And he was studying Bhagavatam with the aim of translating it so that he could please his Gurudev, who gave him the instruction to do so. He was fully focused on that. So, if our Guru tells us, bathing Radha Kund, bathing Govinda Kund, then we can achieve all perfection by doing so. And if he tells us, distribute books, then someone may say, well, that's karma yoga. But if a Brajbasi tells us to do that, then we will attain Radha Kund. And we'll never attain by ignoring that order and jumping in Radha Kund 50 times a day. There's so many devotees living in Vrindavan, they're pledged to live in Vrindavan, but they leave during the heat because it's too hot for them. Then what is that? I'm not criticizing all of you for doing that, but I'm saying that you know, if the whole thing is you're just going to live in, I love Vrindavan and I never leave, but just 1 month or 2 months a year, that means you're not actually on the transcendental platform. So living in Vrindavan is not such a cheap thing that you think that means we're seeing Vrindavan as a material place. As Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur so nicely pointed out, and Prabhupada translated in one of his purports, but you know, Thakur didn't live in Vrindavan, but he always lived in Vrindavan. Then Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, the latter part of his pastimes, he didn't live in Vrindavan, he was always living in Vrindavan. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was living in Calcutta. Did he live in Calcutta? No way, he was always in Vrindavan. But someone who's superficially living in Vrindavan, but they're not actually absorbed, if they're not... Bishoy chariya kobe shuddha hobe man tabe hama herabo shri Vrindavan. If we're not actually free from the desire for sense gratification, we're not actually living in Vrindavan. Of course, there's benefit from being here. Anyway, one is here. Even as an offender, one gets benefit, as was seen by Putana, Agasura, Bakasura, and so many others. But at the same time, one shouldn't imitate and think that just because I'm doing my eating, sleeping, mating and defending here that I'm on the level of Rupa Goswami. As long as there is eating, sleeping and mating and defending, then when Rupa Goswami is Nidrahara Vihara Kadi Vijito Chatyanta Dino Chayo, even you may be very austere, but even that's not enough. You have to be atyanta dina, extremely considering oneself, extremely, for in other words, should be very humble. Yeah, you want to say something?
I have this idea in my mind that I would learn the different areas here from Govardhan, like there's these books and describes the pastimes that happened there. And like that, so I can have more knowledge of where I'm living in Govardhan.
Very good idea.
It's
a very good idea, but if it's done in the proper mood. Because it's not just by learning, like a geography book, that one can understand anything about Vrindavan. But if one does so, accepting the Guru as the revealer of Vrindavan, then it's possible. Then it may be helpful. Even one may superficially gain more knowledge than one's Guru. But one should always see that the Guru is the revealer. That's the great mistake is so many so-called disciples of Srila Prabhupada made. They thought, yeah, he doesn't know very much. I know more. I have to find someone who knows more. But no one knows more. It's their foolishness. So you have to be very careful. It's a very dangerous place. A few years ago, Indrajyotna Maharaj, he was sending some of his disciples to be under my care or whatever in India. He said, under the condition, never let them go to Vrindavan unless you personally go with them. Dangerous, because the tendency is to think that, well, you know, all these people, they're already on a high level, and what do I need to do all this basic stuff for? Just be a Brijbasi, that's all. But it's not such an easy thing. Not artificially. So you're in good shelter here. Gopi Prandana Prabhu, you're extremely fortunate to be in his care, under his guidance. Extremely fortunate. And then Kesha Bharati Maharaj is just there. Bhakti Gaurav Narayan Maharaj. So you're doing that? You're going every day offering obeisances? Why? You go. You can walk every day and offer obeisances. You don't have to say just offer obeisances to them. Come back. Your Bhagavad study will be enhanced thousands of times. Bye. If you can learn this one thing to... What is this? Mahat sevam dvaram aho vimuktis. If you can learn this one line, apply it in your lives, then your Bhagavatam study will be successful. You all know this? Well-known line from Bhagavatam. Prabhupada often quoted. Mahat seva dvaram aho. Who says? No, but, well, he's aho. They say. Who's they? Yeah, everyone who's got any sense. Tumo dwaram yoshitam sanghi sangam. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Hare Krishna. No.